So I am in the U.S. Navy, and we were on deployment one year, and I was standing watch in port, and I got word that there was a ship that had grounded. And what you need to know is that when a ship grounds, it's not like parking your 800-foot car in the garage. Instead, it's more like you have a broomstick and you're outside in a hurricane and you're trying to balance that broomstick on a single finger. It's resting on a single point and everything in the known universe is acting against that broomstick. The wind, the gravity, and your job is to keep that broomstick upright. My job on the ship is to keep ships upright. So when we got this message, I knew that I was going to have to select a team of people because we were close by, and we were going to have to go respond. The ship was taking on a lot of water. There was major flooding. There had already been a fire at this point in time. In addition, they were also listing, and they were in danger of heading towards what we call the danger angle. In other words, they were in danger of capsizing. So the very next morning, I took my team of 11 sailors, and we hop on a small boat, and we go to see this ship. And we're going to board. We're going to be there as long as it takes, and our job is to find the damage, to fix the damage as much as we can, and to keep that ship upright so that they can bring it back in port. So I remember being in the small boat, and almost instantly, it looks like the situation is bad. I'm looking into the distance. The clouds are gray. The waves have really picked up. They're quite high. I'm in a tiny boat, so I know exactly how high they were at this point in time. And we're supposed to have a storm within the next 24 to 48 hours with 40 knot winds. Again, you're balancing your broomstick. I was balancing mine. That is a bad, bad day for things to happen. But luckily, after a couple of failed attempts, we were finally able to go from this small boat onto the ship. And that's where our real work began. We were working in three cargo holds. I'd say that it's probably bigger than this room, actually. They're quite massive. And because of the damage that this ship sustained when they ran hard aground, there's some pretty serious problems. First and foremost, their watertight doors have been completely damaged. The ship has been dented and bent and just ripped and morphed in ways that steel should not be ripped and bent and morphed. So we started our work in a forward cargo hold, all right? And in this forward cargo hold, there is tons and tons and tons of water, okay? On a normal person, on you people, it would be up to your hips. On me, it was more up to my chest. And so we're working, on our very first day in this precarious situation in water all the way up to our chest, but it's not just water. There's also fuel in that water, and that fuel just so happens to be extraordinarily corrosive. I can remember taking off my boots that night because, oh, by the way, we're also sleeping and eating and doing everything on that ship to work on it round the clock. And I can remember taking off my boots that night and actually seeing where skin had eaten away from skin had eaten away from skin. It's really a bizarre sight to behold. But finally, we're able to get this this compartment dewatered enough that we can see where the water is pouring in. And so it's pouring in. It's between this pump that is welded to the deck, to the floor for you civilian types, all right? It's welded to the floor and this steel beam that goes from floor to ceiling, all right? I'm the shortest one in the group. There's a tiny space in between the pump and the beam, and we need to plug that hole. And they say, hey, Sil, can you do that? Can you fit your arm in there? I was like, oh, yeah, I can totally fit my arm. We're good. I'll do this. So I've got, any rags, any putty, anything I can find. I'm cramming it in here. I'm using wooden wedges, anything I can do to stop this flow of water. But there's another thing that you need to know about what happens when a ship grounds. Just because it's not moving through the water doesn't mean that it's not moving. It is. Outside forces are still acting on it. So it's not just, sitting there on the reef. Instead, it's twisting the way that you might twist a dish towel. In fact, I can remember standing in one spot and looking to my left, and the ship was twisting backwards, and looking to my right at the exact same time, and the ship was twisting forwards. But oh, by the way, it's also moving up and down. So you're getting back and forth and side to side. It's a very bizarre motion. So I've got my hand in between this pump and this steel beam, and I look forward, and the pump is moving towards my shoulder, and I look backwards, and the steel beam is moving towards my shoulder, and I'm right up to my shoulder here. And I know that I'm telling this, and it takes 30 seconds to tell you how this went down, but in reality, this was a split second. And I realized what was happening. I got my arm out just in time, because if I had been a gnat's hair slower, 100,000 tons of force would have ripped my arm from my shoulder. That would have happened. And this is kind of our introduction to damage control, to learning that this is real life, that it's dangerous, it's precarious, and it's always in charge. And that's kind of how things went for the next, week that we were on board. We're always trying to stay on top of the damage. You can never completely repair it, but you can try. So we're patching things with concrete, but because the ship is moving, it's always tearing our patches apart. And every time it does, there's new tears. The ship is literally tearing itself and bending itself apart. Okay, we're getting closer and closer and closer to the point of no return. And we're working round the clock to combat this, to shore up this damage. But we know that we need to make it at least a week. If we can make it 1 week, the high tide will come in. And the plan is that when high tide comes in, what we're going to do is we're going to take some of the weight off the ship. We're going to offload some of this equipment, the helicopters and the Humvees and the trucks and the whole nine yards, all right? We're going to take some of these things off the ship. And if we do that, it should be light enough that when the high tide rolls in, hopefully we can float and tugs can take us safely back into port. And God, I hope so. Our patches will hold up. But there's a problem. We don't know the damage where the ship is sitting on top of the reef. And that's very problematic if you're going to float your ship. So I remember the day before high tide was supposed to roll in, I went to the salvage guy. This dude's an expert. He's been doing it for decades at this point in time. And I asked him, I said, how's this going to go? And he says, honestly, I don't know. And from the dude that's been doing this for years and years and years, that is not what you want to hear. You want him to tell you that everything's going to be okay, but he certainly does not say that. And I can remember he said to me immediately thereafter, he said, but I tell you what, we've got 24 to 48 hours before we reach the point of no return. So next day comes, it's the day of float off. I know how dangerous the situation is. And I take my team of sailors up topside to tell them what's going on and to tell them what our plan of attack is going to be. And so along the way, I tell them, listen, this is very dangerous, okay? I can't promise you that this is going to go well. I can't promise you that you're going to go home. I don't know that. But here's what we're going to do to take some precautions. First and foremost, I want you guys to ring up what we call monkey lines in the cargo holds where you're going to be working, okay? Monkey lines are just rope with knots tied in them so you can climb it. And I said, should the ship capsize or sink, all right, you use those monkey lines and you try and crawl up topside where we'll have the other side rigged. We've got our life jackets. We've got whistles. We've got these little water-activated flashing lights, all right? So what we're going to do is if that happens, we're going to swim out to this buoy over here. We're going to spoke up our life jackets in a wheel formation, and we're going to swim to this island, and we're going to wait for help there. But in between, I want you guys to call your families. You can't tell them where you are. You can't tell them what you're doing, but you need to call them. You need to tell them you love them. You need to settle up anything you need to settle up. You need to tell them where your last will and testament is. I myself did not have a last will and testament, but I remember calling my parents and saying, this is where I want you to bury me. I don't have a will, but please give these things to these people. I texted family members to tell them that I loved them, that I didn't know what was going to happen, that I just wanted them to know in that moment and forever that I would always love them. But thankfully, the day came, and like I said, everything went off without a hitch because obviously I'm standing right here before you today. But the thing is that I learned a really important lesson that day. And in fact, I learned really important lessons that week because being in the military, we automatically assume that the things that are going to hurt us, the things that are going to kill us, the things that are going to put up the biggest fight in our lives are going to be people, are going to be flesh and blood, and they're probably going to be holding weapons, probably going to be wearing a uniform of some sort. In fact, when I told my parents what I was doing, my dad later confessed that he thought that they were sending me to a secret mission in North Korea. And I was like, that is absolutely not what is happening. That is the furthest thing from what has happened. That's ridiculous. But what I did learn is that sometimes the biggest enemy you face in your life is something that is bigger and more powerful than you and can crush you in an instant. But it also just so happens to be something that you can't see. Thank you.